Welcome to A Roundabout Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. It's Wednesday, January 25th, and first thing on tap today, WUTC's Richard Winham is speaking with a Chattanooga couple who hope to be running Chattanooga's largest independent beer brewery by the end of the year. 3 years ago, they got started, and Richard Winham is talking to them about how they managed to go from being a microbrewery to a macrobrewery in such a short time.
While Joel and Melanie Crouchstrunk moved to Chattanooga a little over 3 years ago, they've only had their microbrewery and taproom named after two of the men credited with establishing geology as a science, a Scot named James Hutton and an Englishman called William Smith. And if you're wondering why they called their taproom after two relatively obscure geologists from the 18th century, well, that will become clear in a moment. The taproom, called Hutton and Smith, has only been open for about 18 months. Prior to that, they were raising the capital they needed to build it.
The first year, we weren't really here that much because we were working in the oil field in West Texas to save money to start the brewery.
You have an interesting history, Joel. It kind of comes out in little bits. So you were a high school counselor in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And you came to Chattanooga to open a brewery.
Yeah.
I don't think that's most people's story. You know?
No, no.
That way.
And in the interim, worked in the oil business.
What did you do in the oil fields?
We were geologists, but more specifically, mudloggers on well sites. So we would evaluate drill cuttings and, you know, report what formations they're drilling through and monitor gas that comes out of the well. And just keep everybody posted. And then, you know, they call it mud logging because you end up with a graph log that shows the line of the hole and how fast they're drilling and what the gases are. And there's symbols all over it that show the formation and that kind of thing. And then when they're done with the well, you have this long log that you can hand over to the company and they have a record of the whole then.
It was while they were out in the wilds of West Texas that Joel began learning the business of brewing beer firsthand. He'd been a home brewer for more than a decade, but after spending quite a lot of time in a commercial microbrewery in a small town in Texas, he realized both that was what he too wanted to do, and that he had a lot to learn if he was going to do it.
We actually hung out a lot at Big Ben Brewing Company in Alpine, Texas, and befriended everybody there.
You're probably in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah, you are. And we got lucky because we got on a couple of wells south of Pecos that were an hour and a half from Alpine, and we found Big Ben Brewing down there and just befriended everybody that worked there and the brewer. And we would go hang out all day down there and stay the night and, you know, drink beer with those guys and help them can or whatever they were doing for the day, and really got a lot of useful information from them.
I'm getting that. Yeah, that's interesting. So how big is Alpine? Not very big, right?
It's not big at all, no. It's sort of on the gateway to the Big Bend National Park down there.
Ah, okay.
And it's north of there, but I don't know how big it is, but it's a small town.
And so the brewery pretty much is the game in town.
Yeah, they're the only brewery operating anywhere in that area. So their distribution is wide, far and wide, because there's only little small towns there, so they would have to push their product great distances.
I got you.
Sell it. Oh. Yeah. I had been homebrewing for a long time, and I'd spent some time in other breweries. I'd never worked in a production facility. That was probably my closest contact to a production brewery because they let us just, whatever they were doing, we could come hang out and see what they were doing and lend a hand.
The work in the oil fields petered out after about 18 months, but in that time they'd managed to save enough money and Joel had gained sufficient experience that they felt ready to come back to Chattanooga and open their tap house and microbrewery, which they did, and which they called Smith & Hutton.
We started brewing and got the brew house together before we were open to the public because we wanted to make sure that we were brewing decent beer. And we we planned to have a 3-month period of test batching to make sure that the product was turning out like we wanted. And early on, we were pretty lucky with some of our beers and then not so lucky with others. But
what do you mean?
Well, we have dumped a few batches because they just didn't turn out how we wanted them to. And we're trying to put out a quality product. So
I gotcha. So you, would you mind walking me through that process on a given type of beer?
Sure.
How do you begin to develop a recipe?
What I like to do is start with a base style where you're, let's say, you know, our first beer that we brewed was our IPA, which is, you know, one of the most popular styles, if not the most popular style in the U.S.
Which has an interesting history in itself, doesn't it?
Yeah.
My understanding of it is when the Brits went to India and they wanted to give the troops beer, they had to figure out a kind of beer that would travel. Was that what it was?
That's exactly right. So what they determined was, or discovered, was that the more hops that you put in a beer, the more preserved it will be as it travels.
Okay.
So that's why IPAs tend to be much more bitter. And so in the U.S., as with a lot of other things, they took the idea and then they, you know, turned it up to 11, so to speak. And so you get these beers that are IPAs that are, especially West Coast IPAs, that are very, very bitter, very aromatic. So the English IPA is not necessarily like the American style IPA.
How many different kinds of beer do you offer?
I've kind of lost track of the number of beers that we've brewed. I think if we haven't hit 30, we're approaching 30 different styles that we've brewed.
And how many taps do you have right now?
Right now we have 20 in the tap house, but we have, I think, 16 or 17 that are flowing right now. So we started with 12 and we just recently added 8 more to get to 20 because one of the advantages of having a small brewery is that you can brew many different styles. And we had all this beer that was sitting in the walk-in that we couldn't put on tap because we had 12 beers on tap already. And we installed the 8 additional taps, and now we've been anywhere from 2 to 5 beers on tap on the second set of taps. So it's really been beneficial for us, and it's been great for customers to have even more variety in the tap room. So it just depends on when you go in there. Our beers change all the time. We have like 4 or 5 that are always on, but we brew a lot of different styles, and that's why in a year and a half we're approaching 30 or have brewed close to 30.
So it sounds to me like you operate almost like a coffee shop where you're doing different brews at different times. And
yeah, and we do some seasonal stuff, and we have our staples like our IPA, our Igneous IPA, or Rope Gun Rye. Smith's ESB is on pretty much throughout the winter. And then we'll put on some lighter, easier drinking beers in the summertime. So, yeah, it's very much seasonal and what's in demand at the time. It's just good to have variety and rotation and keep people anticipating a new style or the return of a style that they really liked that was gone for a while.
Yeah, it occurred to me that you probably create a kind of fan base, right? You have a following. You have people who like your beer and want to know what you're going to do next, kind of.
Yeah.
Thing. Rather like a chef, I suppose, in that
sense.
Yeah,
very much so. Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's been great this year because we were limited by law to 6.3% alcohol in our beers until the first of this year. And now that we can brew up to 10.1%, we have this whole array of new styles that are at our fingertips. And it's made it easier to fill out those 20 taps because we have all these other styles that we can delve into.
Is there a big demand? That's what they call high gravity beer, right?
Yeah, there's a pretty big demand for it. Having that variety, we don't brew a lot of them. We've got 4 on tap right now out of 16 or 17 that are over 8%. But not everybody's going in there and drinking three or four of those. It's more to...
You have
the variety there, you know.
They might walk in, but they probably won't walk out.
Yeah, exactly. So, which is why we only serve them in a maximum of 10 ounces, too. So, but it's nice to go into a brewery and say, okay, we have a beer that's 4.8%. We also have a beer that's 9%. And you can't, you know, there's such a disparity between the flavors of those beers. And, you know, some styles want to be that high in alcohol or should be that high in alcohol. So... to get them tasting just right, they have to have that alcohol content. You can get a heavier mouthfeel. You can get some heat, a little bit of warmth on your palate. And, you know, there's certain styles like an IPA where I feel like 7% is, or around 7% is where it should be. Or, you know, we brew a double IPA. And that, I mean, that type of beer can be anywhere up to 10%. Ours is 9%. Or an imperial stout, these bigger beers that
whereas lagers tend to be lower in alcohol, is that true?
Not all lagers. There's a kind of a common misconception, largely fueled by all the light lagers that were in existence for so long here in America, that a lager is this, you know, straw yellow looking fizzy drink.
Right.
But
right.
You know, traditional German styles of lagers can be very high in alcohol. And we really try and embrace German styles as much as we can. I'm really kind of a big fan of German styles. So we've done a Bock and we do a Pilsner, a Czech style Pilsner. And
yeah, I was going to say, there was a piece on 60 Minutes a few years ago talking about Czech beer, and apparently Czech beer is some of the best in the world, some people consider, right?
Yeah, especially their Pilsner. They're really known for their Pilsner. Probably by volume and sales, the biggest seller in Europe, probably. Especially, you know, Germanic states and...
Which is kind of interesting, isn't it? Because you don't really think of Czech beer here in America. You don't see that very much, do you?
No, not really. And there aren't very many people brewing a Czech-style pils in the States. They do iterations of it that are close, but not...
Do you do that?
We do. Ours is pretty close to a Czech style. It's, if you were going to say it was a style of Pilsner, it would be closest to the Czech style. But a true Czech Pilsner is, there's very, the Rhein-Heinsgebot that was instituted in Germany is, you know, determines what you can put in the beer. So, you know, certain styles only have these certain ingredients and you can't go outside those guidelines. And a Pilsner is very much like that. So we fudge the line a little bit. We don't use exactly what the traditional Pilsen style brewers would use, but we're pretty close.
In addition to the tap room on the corner of Martin Luther King Boulevard and Douglas Street, Smith & Hutton's beer is also available in 28 bars and restaurants across the city. A list is on the website. This past summer, they won a bronze medal in the Great American Beer Festival in Denver. The festival is a showcase for microbreweries from across the country. In the category they entered, they were competing with 54 other breweries from across the country. They came in third. It was the first time they'd entered the competition, and they won a bronze medal. Now they are about to expand their business with a huge new brewery, the biggest in the city, on Riverside Drive. The new brewery will quadruple their capacity and make it possible for them to start selling their beer in cans and bottles in local supermarkets and grocery stores.
We're on the cusp of being the biggest brewery in Chattanooga and having the largest distribution out of any brewery in Chattanooga. So, you know, that was, we came to town and we wanted to be in a new area on ML King that we thought was up and coming, and we made that happen, and we wanted to brew the best possible beer we could, and we've had that feedback. And the ultimate plan was to carry that on into a larger production, and we're doing that now, and we, you know, are the first to do that. There are other breweries in planning that are that may come to Chattanooga that will be the same size as us. But, you know, part of our plan was to be the first. So
where to go?
Yes.
The brew house and tap room are on the corner of Martin Luther King Boulevard and Douglas Streets. All the details about Smith & Hutton, the history of the brewery, and the various styles that they brew are on their website. Just Google Smith & Hutton. For WUTC's Around and About, I'm Richard Wood.